Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper.
Hello, y'all, and welcome to the Mill Creek, Tennessee podcast. I have another great guest for you, as always, focused on the volunteer state and our nation today, with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. This time, special guest, Williamson County Commissioner Mary Smith. But first, for more information about the Mill Creek View podcast, visit us on Facebook, Getter, Twitter, Rumble, Spotify, iTunes, or anywhere you get your podcasts and socials at Mill Creek View, Tennessee. We've been working hard to bring you the news you need and fresh content and all the cool places, so check it out. And don't forget to subscribe, and thank you for listening. Welcome to our People in the News episode, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking with Mary Smith. The Williamson County Board of Commissioners, often referred to as the County Commission, is the legislative body of the county government consisting of 24 members, two of which are elected from each of the 12 districts for all 4-year terms of office, just like the Hunger Games, actually. Mary Smith takes her passion for service to the Williamson County government as the County Commissioner for District 5. Growing up in a large family, Mary's parents and grandparents instilled a strong sense of patriotism and a heart for service in her. In her campaign, she said, since 2010, the debt for our county budget has grown by 87%, while our population has grown by just under 40%, and our overall debt has increased by over 68%. Instead of looking for ways to curb spending, we continue to pour more money into construction projects without providing proper transparency into how our tax dollars are truly being spent. In the meantime, we have roads which are unsafe, emergency services that are understaffed, and teachers who are overwhelmed, undervalued, and leaving the profession altogether. Our community needs a truly conservative voice on our Board of Commissioners so that we can work together to ensure the needs of our residents are being met. She wants to be that voice that puts Williamson County families first. She says she's not a politician, but is someone who listens to people, takes time to understand the problems, and looks for creative and common sense solutions to tackle even the biggest challenges. Her endorsements did not come from longtime government officials or political insiders. They came from hardworking citizens and families who care deeply about the future of this country. I'm sorry, with this county and country, probably. With every conversation and with every show of support for her grassroots campaign, she feels truly honored, humbled, and blessed, she says. She first moved to Williamson County in 2000, married to her soulmate, Wade, for almost 22 years, 3 children, Ava, Aubriana, and Gavin, I hope I said that right, and 3 born at Williamson Medical Center and have either graduated or are attending Williamson County schools. She works in Franklin as a member of Life Point Arlington, located in King's Chapel community. Graduated cum laude from University of Missouri with degrees in management, information systems. Sorry about that UT win, 66-24, but good job beating Vanderbilt. Earned an MBA in leadership and ethics from John Brown University. How are you, Mrs. Smith?
I'm good. I was like listening to you. I was like, oh, I need to update a little bit of that. Things change very quickly in just a few months around here. We've taken on a little bit more debt at the county. I was trying to remember too, there's a few other things. The church I go to shifted. So now it's college, it's Life Point College Grove instead of Life Point Arrington. So I was like, okay, I need to go out and update my website. A little out of date, just a little bit, but that's life, right? Life comes at you fast and you just learn to roll with it.
And I have so many questions and so little time. It goes very fast on this show too. Let me just quote from your website and see if we got it right. You said, I am truly humbled and grateful for the outpouring of love and support since I made the decision to run. I've never thought of myself as a politician, but considering the important issues facing our county and country, I knew I could not remain on the sidelines. I have a deep-rooted belief that serving others is the biggest joy one can experience. I want to take my heart for service and represent the hardworking people in District 5. Now that you've been there a while, is it still the biggest joy?
It is. People ask me, I mean, that's the normal question you get, right? Once you get in, it's like, how's it going? And I think to everyone, you know, it's challenging. I mean, I think if you take public service seriously, I don't know if everyone's aware of it, most of us county commissioners have full-time jobs. So you do the commission portion, the public service portion, in your spare time. And when you're someone like myself, you know, I'm a mom of three. My oldest actually is getting ready to have a baby, so I'm actually going to be a grandmother.
Congratulations.
Here very soon. So, you know, you have your personal life, you have your work life, your professional life, and then also doing the public service. It's very time consuming. But I think the thing that I've enjoyed the most is continuing the community outreach. Community outreach is really important to me during my campaign. I met so many wonderful people. And I don't know if folks know where District 5 is, but District 5 is actually the Nolensville area and then Arrington. So we are one of the fastest growing areas. We have a lot of growth. We mostly are rural. Nolensville's grown a lot. People, you know, if you're aware of Nolensville, usually the first thing that comes to mind is either the feed mill or the traffic. So those are kind of the two things that, you know, Nolensville is known for. You know, it's being able to go to sporting events, getting to know people. There's so many charities in District 5 that I just call it, it's like citizen activism is alive and well in Nolensville. And I have enjoyed every single bit of getting to hear more about what work they're doing. And these are just normal people. Normal people, a lot of them have jobs and they still see a need and they're willing to step up. And I think that's, you know, kind of what encouraged me in taking and representing this district is that I see people who are willing to step up and do the right thing and get in there and do something and aren't always reliant on government to take care of it for them. And I think that that is a key ingredient if you really support limited government, is that you have to say, how big do I really want my governor to be? You know, how much am I willing to take on myself, my own responsibilities, my own local community, versus completely relying on the government to take care of it for me? So I've enjoyed every bit. It's been super educational. It's been a brain dump just getting, you know, or drinking from a fire hose, however you want to put it, just to get to know everything about our county. But we have an amazing county. We have some of the best people that work for our county, and these people do it. A lot of them don't do it for the money. They do it because they really do care. And I've loved getting to know more of the people within the county government itself. It's been really encouraging.
And Nolensville is where our namesake Mill Creek is, and the Mill Creek Brewery, as a matter of fact, the only other company in town that does that. So that's nice that there's a connection there. I also took from your site, I have lived in this county for almost 17 years. I have owned businesses in Fairview and Spring Hill and have over 25 years of corporate experience in team building, problem solving, and strategic management. There is a reason I went back to school in my 40s to earn an MBA in leadership and ethics. It is because I truly believe in both. I'm looking forward to taking my experience, love for this country, and passion for my county to the Board of Commissioners so that together we can create solutions based on common sense, core values, and the Constitution. Do you see common sense, Tennessee values, and honoring the Constitution being done?
For the most part, yes. I think sometimes what I see is, I think sometimes people get caught up just in their everyday lives. And I think we saw it during COVID too, right? Like we saw this like sense of, oh, I want to feel safe. You know, we didn't know what it was. And you started to see some of the people willing to kind of, you know, easily give up some of their freedoms. And so I think that that's where you see that a little bit, you know, when it comes to just the freedom portion and in personal liberty with the Constitution that the Constitution enforces. And so I think that you definitely see people that have a love for our country, but sometimes they've lost, you know, the meaning behind the Constitution. And so even myself, you know, I have to refresh myself and, you know, my husband and I, we often have debates about, you know, well, is this constitutional? What does the Constitution say about it? And the Constitution, my belief is that it's one of the most divinely inspired documents that exist today. And I think that if you read it and you read it well, you can find the answers there. You know, I feel the same way about the Bible. So I feel like if you take the time and you reflect and you know, let it speak to you, then you know which direction you should be going in. And it's the principles, right? So I think with every decision you make, you kind of want to say, okay, is this something that would be considered constitutional? Are we still preserving our core values? Are we still preserving our freedoms and our liberties? And sometimes you don't like the answer. Sometimes, especially when it comes to speech, free speech, we don't like what other people say. Sometimes when it comes to property rights, we don't like what people are going to do with their property. But at the end of the day, we have to, you know, rely on people to make right choices individually and not force those, our choices onto to people. So it's sure. Yeah, I think that Tennessee is very, very conservative. I do think that people love their freedom here. I do think that we just, sometimes we lose sight of what freedom really is. And that's where, you know, you got to constantly have those conversations. I think conservative voices have felt a little bit marginalized, and I worked really hard, especially during my campaign, to have open conversations to let folks know that there's nobody's trying to take anything away. It's actually the opposite. We're trying to give you more. We're trying to give you more freedom of choice. But there, with freedom of choice comes responsibilities and accountability, and that's on you as an individual. So, yeah, I think that I love Tennessee. I enjoyed meeting the people that have been here for generations. And I'd like to keep it that way. I would hate there for there to be a day when the oldest resident of Williamson County or the majority of Williamson County have only lived here for 10 years or less. I would like majority to be people who've stayed here and have settled here. And, they're the history.
So this year is the first year that the primaries in Williamson County had candidates that were allowed to run affiliated with a political party. In previously it was nonpartisan races. How do you think that went?
That was just the school board. So the school board had to declare. Let's so county commission, county commission's always been the partisan primaries, but school board. I think from what I saw, I think people were confused. I still think that, we still see folks when you say you're Republican or you're Democrat or you're independent, I think you kind of heard it across the spectrum. It's like, well, you can't win unless you run as a Republican. Well, if that's the truth, then a lot of folks that may not embrace Republican platform run as Republican, but aren't really embracing the platform, what it stands for. And then, of course, you have the other, I think, dichotomy of that is that, well, are you a Rhino Republican, which, I think I've heard of Rhino Republican or
establishment Republican. Yeah.
Yeah. An establishment, I think that definitely got a negative connotation to it, because I think when I think of establishment, I think of people that maybe just get so settled and complacent and just the way things are. That they don't think innovatively anymore, or they don't think about, wait a minute, who do I really serve? And I think when you get in government, it's just like with any job, you get comfortable with the people that you work with on a daily basis. You trust them. They're giving you the right answers. And sometimes you lose sight of getting out into the public and into the communities and really talking to people and saying, okay, what are the issues that you're dealing with? But back to the school board, being the kind of choosing their parties, I think it went well. I know that a lot of folks feel like school boards should not be partisan. So there shouldn't be a party line when it comes to a lot of the school issues that they're discussing. But from what I've seen, because I'm on the education committee for the county commission, and so I've tried to attend and at least listen into all the school board meetings. What I've seen with this new school board is I see a lot of really good discussion, and I see a lot of folks that are really trying to solve some of the problems. We're not in the COVID stage anymore. So now we're back into this. How do we retain our teachers? How do we recruit new teachers? And still dealing with some of the core values. There's some other challenges I think we see in our school right now that they've got to deal with. And these people put in a lot of work. I mean, they put in a lot more hours, I think, even than county commissioners do. And so I don't like to criticize anybody for willing to serve, but I do think that when you go out and vote, you better do your research. Make sure you're choosing these candidates that don't look at the letter behind their name. Make sure that they're actually going to represent the values that you want to see in your elected officials. So the
Williamson family's political action committee held a 2022 election kickoff event at Franklin on Tuesday, where the group announced their Williamson family's endorsed county commission and school board candidate speakers that rallied against their idea of corruption, specifically claims of corruption within the Williamson County government and the school board. Outrage was aimed at tax hikes and the ongoing debate over books in schools that depict alleged nudity or sexual activity, with the group calling these books child pornography. And the Williamson County School Board voted to limit formal complaints about textbooks, instructional materials, and supplementary instructional materials to only current Williamson County school parents and guardians, employees, and students. And that policy was adopted with a 10-2 vote in its favor. Do you have any comments on that or thoughts about that process?
Yeah, so I did reach out to the school board members to let them know that I really felt that we're all stakeholders in our schools. If you live in this county, you're a stakeholder. You want to see our schools thrive because your home values can be impacted by how well our schools are doing. And so I felt like you should have a formal way to bring forth a complaint. And I think I reached out, so not just from the residential standpoint or property tax paying standpoint. Also, I felt parents whose children may eventually go to Williamson County Schools, they were left out of that. Mm-hmm. Grandparents, caregivers. So I don't know. I'm just of the belief that as long as you're being respectful and you're bringing things to people's attention, my goodness, I would love help. You know, if there were things going on in the county that people wanted me to be aware of, I always feel like more communication is better than less. I think, though, that some folks felt like things got a little bit too heated and the respectful factor might have been impacted. And I saw it on both sides. So, I mean, I'm hopeful that we will get back to a middle ground where we can have really good constructive conversations, because I, like other parents, I don't want to see our schools become indoctrination facilities. I don't want to see them become social work facilities, you know, where we're focused on the social side. I mean, there's some things that you've got, parents have to step up and they have to be that person, that responsible person for their children. And I see, you know, from my experience, I mean, my kids have been going to Williamson County Schools, you know, since my daughter started kindergarten in 2005. So we've been Williamson County parents for a long time, and the parents are great. The parents are great. The teachers are great. I think we need to make sure the curriculum is just supporting them. I think we have to make sure that the administration is supporting them, and that we have to get back on track to help our kids and support them so that they can compete in global job markets, because we're not competing anymore. Our kids aren't graduating and competing with the kids across the state. If they're in a virtual world, we're competing with other countries. So we need to make sure that our educational system is on par, if not better, than other countries, not just other states. So I think that's really important. Education is super important to me. And I would like to see our public education system really thrive. And I think we've got to get focused on that. We've got to get focused on the academic side of it and kind of figure out how to keep distractions at a minimum.
So Roger Simon is the editor at large of Epoch Times. Don't know if you're familiar with him or that publication, but he did write something that I wanted to read to you and get your thoughts on. He wrote, "So on to Williamson County, where a war is indeed happening on several fronts. Williamson, as I have written earlier, is one of the wealthiest Republican counties in the country, home to Senator Marsha Blackburn, Outkick's Clay Travis, and numerous country stars, and supposedly famed for its superior educational system that has attracted migrants from many blue states, currently at its extraordinary rate. Only it's anything but superior, suffused by a curriculum euphemistically called wit and wisdom, which is designed not to truly educate children, but to prepare them for citizenship in the kingdom of woke. Third graders learn far more about sexuality and supposedly pervasive racism than they do about math. Williamson families, according to its website, advocate for strong family values, individual responsibility, respect for tradition, and innovation for the future, Clay Travis. Travis, whose children attended Williamson County Schools and who co-hosts the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton show, said the woke ideology is destined to destroy itself, but only if frustrated Americans stand up and say no more. Like a lot of you, I paid attention to who I voted for governor. I paid attention to who I voted for mayor, congressman, and senator. I never, ever thought about who I voted for a school board election my entire life, Travis said. I know that was a flaw now. I know that not being as engaged as a parent allowed what has happened over the last 18 months to happen. How do you feel about all that?
I think for me personally, so I guess I'll go to the personal side, is my son's he's a junior at Page High School. And so my kids started, like I said, in 2005. So I have not personally had any interaction with the Wit and Wisdom curriculum. I do know that I have listened to many parents' testimonies about the impact it's had on their children. And I think that's key. We have to listen and we have to take those concerns seriously. And we have to look at, you know, maybe you can look at a book. I think this is the challenge that we've had. And I've talked to a lot of my teacher friends about this, is that you can look at a book at its face value and be like, well, it's not so bad, but we're seeing it through our eyes. We're not seeing it through the eyes of a six-year-old or seven-year-old, and seeing what impact that might have with them. And not only considering that that book is only one variable in their ecosystem at that time. I mean, they're still exposed to things on television, or they're exposed to other conversations. And so I would go back to the fact that we need to really focus on making sure the curriculums that are chosen, that there's nothing controversial about them, but they're really focused on the academic skills that we expect from our Williamson County schools. And if there's an issue, why take that battle up? You know, let's pick our battles wisely. Let's find a curriculum that everyone can agree on, that's not going to make anybody. I mean, I agree with inclusion. I don't like bullying. I hate bullying. My kids know that. And I think every kid should feel like school is a safe place. But you know what? The real world is, there's always going to be a mean kid. There's always going to be somebody that gets their feelings hurt. There's always going to be a sense of not belonging. That's kind of childhood and puberty. But I think that, don't put it into the books. Don't try and think that the books can parent. Or don't think that the teachers, for the most part, I feel like they want the kids to learn. Let's empower the teachers to do what they went to school for. I don't want to see all of our 20 plus year experienced teachers leaving, because these young teachers coming out, they need mentors. They need to see how you can reach a child, how you can prepare them, how you can help them. And so I have a huge heart for teachers, because they don't get paid a lot, and they do this because it's something they're passionate about. You're always going to have a few bad ones in the bunch. That's life. But I think that if we can give teachers the power they need to reach the kids and to help them focus on the academic side of things and stop, you know, bringing in this controversial issues, we're going to be so much more happy, and we're going to be so much more united, and we're going to be so much more successful.
Is it because the commission only meets once in a while? I think it's once every month for 7 months or something like that. There's been no movement on things like banning or masking or vaccine mandates at the county level. I've seen no movement on that, but the people are overwhelmingly for it. I mean, even Alberta, Canada banned it, but our red state hasn't to this very day.
Yeah, I think a lot of that's at the state legislature side of things. I think we try to get, there was a few bills that they tried to get passed through. And then, you know, obviously on the masking side, it was really on the students. I think at the county commission, I think the only thing that I would see coming through for us, because we really are, we're kind of the purse strings. So if there's anything specific to funding, would come for us. I do think that there's been, a little bit of discussion and debate about these federal funds, the ARPA funds and the COVID rescue funds. Are there any strings attached? Because I think that's one thing we do want to be very careful about, is we don't want to take money from the federal government where they basically dictate to us what policies we need to follow.
Right.
So that's kind of where I see the county commission really coming into play and playing a role, is, you know, hold on a second before we sign off and taking this money. Do we still have autonomy? Are we still going to be able to make the right decisions for our residents and for our constituents. So I do think that those have been the discussions that I've seen mostly around anything to do with, like, you know, the vaccine or the mask mandates. I do feel like, at least in Tennessee, especially Williamson County, people do believe in the majority believe in, you know, freedom of choice when it comes to your health choices.
One thing I was very surprised to find when I landed here is that there are 24 commissioners on the county. The county that Steve is in right now, the one I just left, is five. There are five. So how do you find the legislative process in such a big group?
Well, you know, and that's where Williamson Families came in. They really worked hard to get a majority on the commission so that we could start to at least feel like we have a voice. I think that we have, what I've seen, I think our commission is, I've been very impressed. There's always, you know, a few folks you may never agree with, but as far as I've seen the discussion, these people, they love this county. They come from different aspects of it. So I know there's a lot of us, but I think that so far so good. We've had really constructive conversations. They've been very welcoming. I'm the new person on the block. Some of the folks have been there for a long time. I think that they've been very open to the information that I've tried to present. I think they've been, and I think it's a lot of it was just our perception that maybe they were making these decisions, you know, in a vacuum. But I honestly think that, like I said, most of these people have full-time jobs. You don't have a lot of time to do a lot of research on your own. And so I think now we have a more of an engaged commission. We have people really going out and doing a lot more research and it being able to present a full picture. So sometimes if you have to make a decision quickly and you don't have time to understand the full picture, it's hard. It's really hard to do. So I think at least we have an engaged group of folks and professional people that are really willing to say, hey, let's all collectively work together, put out the full picture so we can all feel good about the decision we're making on behalf of the people who live here.
And for those that don't know, the most important function of the county legislative body is the annual adoption of a budget to allocate expenditures within the three major funds of county government, which is general, school, and highway. So I want to talk about transportation in a second. We talked about schools a little. And any other funds such as debt service, we're going to talk about that, which may be in existence in that particular county, which is ours. The county legislative body has considerable discretion in dealing with the budget for all funds except the school budget, which in most counties must be accepted or rejected as a whole. If rejected, the school board must continue to propose alternatives until a budget is adopted by both the county school board and the county legislative body. That seems pretty messy. But what I found interesting was the University of Tennessee's County Technical Assistance Service publishes the County Revenue Manual to assist county officials in identifying sources of county revenue. We've heard a lot about universities going woke and doing some pretty shady things with federal funds like child mutilation at Vanderbilt and Boston College. How much influence does UT have on our county spending priorities?
UT, I mean, we don't have a presence in Williamson County. So there's really no UT perspective in Vanderbilt's Davidson County. We have some branch locations for Columbia State, even Middle Tennessee State University, that's in Rutherford. So our only university presence really in Williamson County is Columbia State, which is a satellite location out of Murray County, Columbia. So there's no, I haven't seen anything. I do know that the only thing I've seen a presence with UT around is around our some of our continuing education that you can do for county government. They have a facility at UTK, it's a kind of an office there that actually helps educate county officials across the state. It's a really nice service, but it allows you to take classes around just different government functions. So yeah, I haven't seen anything with UT.
Okay. Well, since 2010, the budget has grown by 87% with a population growth of just over 37% and an overall debt increase of more than 68%. And since 2012, the average debt burden for a family of four increased from approximately $13,000 to now over $17,000. I think it might even be higher now. Our school budget makes up almost 70% of our overall county budget. And since 2012, we have increased our school budget by more than 78%, while our enrollment has grown by only just over 28%. There are 47 schools and 40,000 students, 16 preschools, 27 elementary, 12 middle, and 10 high schools. And we have a 93% rate above average, which is awesome. How do you feel about the Department of Education, federal, demanding Penny Schwinn, state head of schools, that she comply with Fed mandates or suffer consequences when our schools are not the problem societally?
Yeah, that's interesting. It's kind of an interesting equation there, the federal to the state to the county, because Williamson County historically has not received a lot of state funding, just because of just the income level that we've been blessed with. So a lot of our families do very well. So we haven't had a lot of state funding come in. I think they're supposed to be changing the formulas. So I'm probably not the best person to kind of speak to like the Department of Education and the impact it has on our local school board. But I know that a lot of that is mostly around the curriculum, which is the big, everyone's very upset about the curriculum. And a lot of that comes down from the state Department of Education. And the other thing I hear, things peripherally is just the amount of funding that we get from the state, because we're high growth. We're a high growth county and it's hard to keep up. I'm not a believer in that growth pays for itself. You got to be creative with different revenue streams, because it's just, you can't keep going back to the taxpayers and just saying, okay, well, we're gonna have to raise your taxes again. We can't afford the things that we need, so we're gonna have to raise your taxes. To me, raising taxes should be the last option.
And the rest of the state is not doing as well as Williamson County. And you know, Hillsdale charter schools were denied by the school board. How do you feel about the appeal of that? And it seems like it would apply much more to other counties than Williamson County, but yet being part of the state, we obviously have to have that fair and equal spread out. And for people who don't know, a charter school had its appeal approved by a state commission after their application was denied by a local school board. That's the case for Tennessee Nature Academy. Their application to open a school in the Antioch area was denied by the Metro Nashville Public School Board of Education, but later approved by the Tennessee Public Charter School Commission.
Yeah, I know we tried to get the charter schools here in Williamson County, and I know that appeal was actually denied also. I've talked to a lot of folks about, you know, pros and cons of charter schools. My children attended a charter school for a very short period of time when we had moved back to Texas just for a job. And so I saw the benefits of the charter school, but I also understand the issues that some might have with them. I think it really comes down to who's running the charter and, you know, how closely they can be monitored. So I understand both sides of it, but at the end of the day, I think that giving parents choice is really important. And it's not always based on curriculum. The reason we chose a charter school is because the schools that we were zoned for were huge. They were massive. My kids were in elementary school. I just didn't want them going to a school that had, you know, 1,500 students in it. So we chose a charter just so we could have kind of that smaller, more, you know, secure environment for them. And we just felt it was best for them, just because who they are, and also gave them more opportunities. I mean, you know, one of the big downfalls of big schools is that when kids want to participate in things that are important to them, whether it's chess club, the football team, the school play, if you have a large school, you limit the possibilities and the opportunities for kids to kind of just get out there and participate. And I think that's such an important part that our schools provide, is the extracurricular activities and the ability to kind of find your way, you know, on your own. And so, like in Texas, my daughter was in third grade when we left and went to the charter. And I remember folks telling me that folks were lined up at 4 o'clock in the morning, the day the clubs were, signups were there for chess club.
Oh, that's so good.
They'd have 100 students there signed up for chess club. I mean, this was a very, very academically strong area, just outside of Texas. So it was in the Austin, just north of Austin area. Actually, it was Williamson County, Texas. Yeah. So that just kind of blew my mind. And I thought, you know, I would prefer a smaller school where the kids, if they want to do chess club, they can. If they want to do another club, they can. If they want to be in the school play, the odds are better for them. But you're seeing here now with the schools, our school's growing, is I have a lot of parents tell me that the kids don't even try. They don't bother to try out for sports. They don't bother to try out for plays because it's the same kids all the time, and their kids don't do travel, travel sports, and it's the competition's just, it's too hard. Yeah. And that kind of bothers me.
More schools, more charter schools would probably be a good thing, I guess, or any schools, not to say no to them. Now, back in your campaign again, you called yourself an analytical problem solver who could help in balancing the county's finances. During the primary, before you got here, the debt was $1 billion. Now I think it's $2.2 billion. And in the primary, the interest rate on that debt was 1%. Today, as any home buying shopper knows, it's about 4%. And we bought the Renaissance Festival grounds for $3 million here in Triune, I think it's called. And we bought $15 million of animal shelters. So debt is obviously going up. I think it's, $4,500 per person at this phase for the county. What are your thoughts on the debt, and what are you guys going to do to try to tackle that?
Yeah, I think that this is something that we're starting to have conversations around. It's actually, if you include principal and interest and the self-supporting debt, which is the hospital, because the hospital actually is able to pay for its own debt, the Williamson Medical Center, we're at close to $1.4 billion. So now, you know, a family of four, if you break that down based on the last population, we say it's about $20,000 for a family of four, or it used to be about, you know, $13,000. And so, you know, the issue I have is kind of what I said during my campaign. It's just not sustainable. Something you've got to have either more revenue coming in, because we just, at what point's enough? $50,000 for a family of four? I mean, when do we say that we just don't want to put this burden on future generations? When are we going to start to see our debt stabilize with the population and the revenue that we are able to bring in? And I do think, you know, like the Renaissance Festival, I would have been a no vote on that, which is what I said during our debate. I just think it's outside the scope of government, and we're not really in the festival business. On the flip side, I've met our Parks and Rec people, and they're great, and they do provide wonderful services to our community. There's a lot of debate on whether Parks and Rec, you know, where that kind of falls in required versus like optional county services. But, you know, at the end of the day, we bought it. But it's sitting there, you know, it's only going to be used 1 month out of the year. So from my perspective, it's like, if we bought this to generate revenue, why aren't we leasing it out? We don't have to operate the festival, but maybe we can find ways to actually use these facilities that we have so they don't sit dormant for 11 months out of the year. So let's be creative about, you know, finding additional revenue sources and not just always have to look at our tax revenue as the main way. It's always going to be the main revenue for our county, but there's other things we can do if we just take a little initiative and start to see how we can actually utilize some of these resources that we already have.
Yep.
Not expanding government too much.
Thank you for saying that. At the last Williamson County Commission meeting, multiple leaders in the county asked for help in protecting historic properties in unincorporated Williamson County. County mm-hmm. Mayor Rogers Anderson has begun assembling a task force to look at preserving such historical structures. Kid Rock, famous personality, has helped push the future of Beechwood Hall, the 106-year-old Williamson County historic home of, Hank Williams Sr., and it was owned by Faith Hill and Tim McGraw, put it into the national news. He said something like, "I think, like so many other people in this country, we are sick of seeing history torn to the ground. Beechwood Hall, like I said, is the former home of Hank Williams Sr. 1951, he purchased it." Do you have any input on that?
Yeah, I've been following because I have friends that live in Leaper's Fork, and so they've been sending me information on it. And, you know, we have a tree next door, a development next door to me that folks were trying to save also. And so I know that people here are very, very protective of the historical aspect of some of the properties and some of just the just the scenery. There's just landmarks, whether it's a building or a tree or just the hills. I mean, there's just so many beautiful spots across Williamson County. So, you know, I am hopeful. And what I always tell folks, and I've said this to trees, like, it never hurts to go and ask and say, listen, what can we do to help? But at the end of the day, it's the property owners, it's their property. We can't infringe upon them. We can't force them, because then where do we stop with that? You know, and telling someone what they can or can't do with their property. In all honesty, if it was that, you know, if it's something that needed to be preserved, I think we should have started, or that, you know, the group of people that want to save it now should have possibly started looking at it 20 years ago. So the fact that it was kind of left to just go into disrepair is unfortunate. I do think that there's been, the Heritage Foundation here in Williamson County does amazing work. They're such a great organization. And I do think that they try as hard as they can. I do think that they respect property rights also. So I think it's been one of those things. I hate to see things get escalated, because sometimes people say things and to evoke emotions. And sometimes when we get really emotional, we lose the logical side of how to fix things in a way that everyone kind of walks away feeling good. So it's, you know, it's we're gonna continue to have those issues. I mean, we've got so much growth. I can't tell you. I mean, I'm out here in Triune. Triune just down the road from me. And there's a lot of historical landmarks. We've got mounds out here. I believe Indian mounds, I've heard. We've got, you know, when my development here was actually being built, lots of Civil War artifacts that were found. So you're going to continue to have that issue. So I just am hopeful that people can work together, find common ground, and figure out, you know, how do we preserve the things that really are important to us without interfering with people's property rights.
Awesome. Well, in the last few minutes we have with you, I just really wanted to get your take on Christopher Richards' convention, and why do you think the Williamson County GOP chairwoman decided to throw racism into the mix as to why this all happened?
Yeah, I know a lot. I know almost everyone that was kind of involved with that, and honestly, I have no good answer for that. Again, I think it's one of those things where people get emotional, and sometimes we let our emotions get the best of us, and then you have social media, and now it's out there forever for everyone to see it. And I just believe in grace, and I just think that sometimes we say things and we do things that we don't always have the ability to think about. We don't have the foresight to know what impact that's going to make. So I'm just a huge believer that, you know, we're all human. We all make errors, but if you're going to be the real adult, if you're going to be the real role model, you're going to be willing to step up and say, you know what, I made a mistake and I'm sorry. And, you know, I'm not perfect. And, you know, always look for those second chances.
Okay. A total of 10,486 votes were cast in that primary. That brought the total early voting to about 20,000, or 11% of the county's 183,000 registered voters. Do you have any comments on voter integrity or why they moved the polling places around? And do those numbers reflect apathy or confusion, or what do you think is the result of that? Or is everybody just satisfied with their Republican county and like it the way it is?
Was that the August? That was the August primary, wasn't it?
That was the primary, yes.
I think that there's a lot of room for improvement. I think there's opportunities to improve our systems overall. I think when you look across the country, Williamson County's problems are minimal compared to most, but I still think that there is room for improvement. And I have had conversations like with our election commission on ways that we can improve our voting system, not just the voter roll. There's many factors. There's the voter roll maintenance, there's the actual machine factor. And I'm an IT person. So, you know, I understand the importance of technology, but I also understand that there's sometimes technology should not be the only answer. So we are working and having those discussions. But again, I think it's that key thing that I've seen in Williamson County is people have to be willing to come to the table, leave their egos at the door, and just be willing to have open, honest, productive conversations. Because I think at the end of the day, we all want the same thing.
That's true. All right. Well, in our last few minutes here, please tell everybody how they can follow you, find you on social media, or look you up in any which way, or help with your service.
Yeah, the best way to link up with me is the vetmarysmith.com. That's my website. It's still up. It's got all my social media links that I'm active on. I'm on Facebook. I'm also on Instagram, but that's the best way. Sign up. You can sign up for my newsletter. I send out a monthly newsletter letting people know what's going on across the county. I also highlight charities of the month. We got a lot of charities out here in Williamson County, especially in District 5. So I always like to highlight those. I also like to highlight the great people that work for our county. So I think that vetmarysmith.com is the best way to reach out and get in contact with me.
Excellent. Well, thanks again for coming on with us. Happy holidays and good luck at the next session of the commission.
Merry Christmas. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I don't understand how you ever did without me. I don't understand how I bring
you down. Welcome to the Steve's Food segment of our show, where we cover what we just heard and anything else on our minds today. Steve, what did you think of Commissioner Smith?
Well, I find that she is very balanced. She has a very graceful attitude, and I like that. You have to have that when you're working with politics and you're working with boards and that kind of thing. Unlike maybe you or I, where we'll get a little more hot-headed and get a little more energized over an issue, she's a very balanced person, and I appreciate that. And offering grace is something I'm working on over a few issues in my life.
Aren't we all?
Yes.
New Year's resolution, grace. Okay, well, let's set this up with clip number one.
Hi, I'm Fox San Antonio's Jessica Headley.
And I'm Ryan Wolf.
Our greatest responsibility is to serve our Treasure Valley communities,
the El Paso, Las Cruces communities,
Eastern Iowa communities,
Mid-Michigan communities.
We are extremely proud of the quality, balanced journalism that CBS 4 News produces.
But we are concerned about troubling the irresponsible one-sided news stories plaguing our country.
The sharing of biased and false news has become all too common on social media. More alarming, some media outlets publish the same fake stories without checking facts first.
The sharing of biased and false
news has become all too common on social media.
More alarming, some media outlets publish things that simply aren't true without checking facts first. Unfortunately, some members of the media use their platforms to push their own personal bias and agenda to control exactly what people think, and this is extremely dangerous to our
So I'm not so sure that came across on audio as well as I thought it did, but we don't have a video clip for it, even on Rumble. But I do think you get the point that the news media often acts like a hive mind, or the Borgs, if you remember your Star Trek lore.
Oh, yes.
Steve, you saw it with your own eyes. What'd you think of that?
You know, I've seen that clip probably over a year ago, and it was right when it goes way back when Trump was talking about fake news. The fact is, when I think that's Sinclair Media who ran all that, but every one of their outlets basically got a sheet of paper or a teleprompter that said, this is what you're going to say.
Yep. That's right. Sinclair Broadcasting, they were caught red-handed when it ordered local news anchors and its stations to read an editorial handed down from their parent corporation. Sinclair completed its merger with Tribune, buying some 40 additional stations. If Sinclair continues to air whatever content it likes on media that it owns, what's to stop other companies from also airing whatever content they choose, right? Newspapers, magazines, and TV networks, as well as groups of local TV stations, might feel that they want to publish or air political commentary, some of which could conceivably have a partisan bias. Whatever will become of this country, it's people use that media property they own to simply say whatever they feel like saying. Well, what happens is like this. A network of at least 51 local branded news sites has popped up since last year under names like the Milwaukee Metro Times, the Mecklenburg Herald, and the Tri-City Record. The sites are focused on key swing states with elections in 2021 and 2022, Arizona, Colorado, Georgia, Michigan, New Hampshire, Nevada, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Virginia, and Wisconsin each follows a similar template. Aggregate local news content and short write-ups about local sports teams and attractions, interspersed with heavily slanted political news aimed at boosting Democratic midterm candidates and attacking Republican opponents. Six American independent writers have each contributed to most of all of the sites in the network, according to an Axios review of bylines on the sites. Well, Steve, you know I have two newspapers in Washington. We have a truth-oriented editorial mandate, let's just call it.
Mm-hmm.
Could that be considered political spin of the right if I'm just not telling the lies of the left?
Yes.
Exactly right. So while all the sites aggregate content from other sources, all six of those authors regularly write stories directly for the Local Report Network, with numerous articles appearing exclusively on those sites. David Brock, of Media Matters, now with the Biden administration to help President Biden fend off House Republicans, that's his new job. What could go wrong? Not good, folks. Not good for free speech and the First Amendment. Please play clip two.
Who are you really shopping for this holiday season? It's okay. You can admit it if you've bought an item or two or 10 for yourself.
Well, it's okay. You can admit it if you have bought an item or two or maybe 10 for yourself.
It's okay. You can admit it. You've bought an item or two or 10 for yourself.
It's okay. You can admit it if you bought an item or two or 10 for yourself.
It's okay. You can admit it if you bought an item or two or 10 for yourself.
It's okay. You can admit it if you bought an item or two or 10 for yourself.
It's okay. You can admit it, Todd. If you bought an item or two or 10 for yourself.
It's okay, you can admit it. If you bought an item or two or 10 for yourself.
It's okay, you can admit it. If you brought an item or two or maybe 10 for yourself.
It's okay, you can admit it. If you bought an item or two or 10 for yourself.
It's okay, you can admit it. If you bought one or two or maybe three or four, maybe even 10 items for yourself.
Yeah.
Okay, one or two or maybe 10 for yourself, right? That was December of 2013.
It's been going on, Steve. It's been going on for decades.
So nothing new under the sun. Just instead of stupid shopping tips, it's now propaganda about more important issues like war, pandemics, and normalizing pedophilia. Elon Musk letting people back on Twitter, but Apple threatening to take them off the App Store like they did to silence Parler is more of the same. Speaking of concentrated power, people ask why I dislike the American Federation of Teachers President for Life, Comrade Randy Rheingarten, so much. Well, let's start with clip number three.
A criminal, like a rogue arms dealer. No. To Mike Pompeo, who in a gross attempt to lunge for the political limelight in the GOP's Game of Thrones that has broken out following Trump's giant fail in the midterms, to him, the most dangerous person in the world is the country's top representative of teachers, Randy Rheingarten. Here's Pompeo's direct quote. Quote, the most dangerous person in the world is Randy Rheingarten. It's not a close call. If you ask, quote, who's the most likely to take this republic down, it would be the teachers' unions and the filth that they're teaching our kids. Mike Pompeo's comments are horrifying, and they are not an isolated incident. They are part of a GOP effort to levy smears and lies about teachers. Teachers, as part of their effort to remake the American public school system, remake it or destroy it, maybe. Rheingarten responded on Twitter like this, quote, I know that Mike Pompeo is running for president, and frankly, I don't know whether to characterize his characterization of me as ridiculous or dangerous. Joining us now, Randy Rheingarten.
Wow.
Teachers. Ridiculous and dangerous. First of all, you know, there's more to that clip, obviously. We're actually here from Randy Rheingarten. But she talks about, she takes her inappropriate, in my mind, trip to Brazil and Ukraine, which cost teachers pensions. Second, that Nicole Wallace is a smug, condescending lady, isn't she?
Oh, she is. Would you like me to finish off that little clip there, Steve? Or should we?
Yeah. Let's just finish that off.
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah.
Let's hear from her.
President of the American Federation of Teachers. I think it is both ridiculous and dangerous, but I wanted to give you a chance now that it's sort of sunk in to respond.
Well, you know, I was actually on my way back from an international trip with labor unions from across the world, like in Brazil, in Ukraine, who have been fighting autocrats and fighting this kind of disgusting, polarizing division, and feeling pretty inspired by that. But Nicole, it was both ridiculous and dangerous, but more than that, it was pathetic in that he's attacking teachers. And the piece that I found most dangerous and pathetic was when he called what we do filth. We all know what code that's about. But at the end of the day, these are the people who all through COVID zoomed in like you and I are doing right now, who engaged with kids in every which way they could, who lift kids up every single day, who teach Anne Frank, the diary of Anne Frank, the diary of Ruby Bridges, the work of Ruby Bridges, and he's calling this filth. It's people who are working every day to lift our kids. That's what's pathetic to me, and that's what's dangerous to me. I don't really care about what he says about me. I really care about what he says about the people who are really trying every day to help our kids, joining with parents, help pursue the American dream and help keep a democracy in place.
Steve, was he attacking teachers?
No, he's talking about Randy Weingarten.
Right. He was attacking her, a communist. Harder to lift kids up, to create empathy, to create a safe and welcoming environment, she said. She said he used filth as code. No, not Anne Frank. Nice try with the Jewish card, but he's talking about sex ed pornography, drag queen story hour in every school as they proposed, and CRT. She doesn't mention that, but instead makes it about that. Spin, spin, spin. He's right. She's the worst. And tying it to the Colorado shooting, which if you go on a little further, you'd hear that kid was a product of her failed schools. Mm-hmm. One more clip, number four, please. That's it.
It makes people feel more alone and more isolated. And what we need to do more and more and more, which is part of the reason why opening schools were so important, bring back the relationships, bring back the comedy, bring people together so that people can see that, you know, they're not just looking at their devices, that they can see that that kind of relational well-being, regardless of what you believe, is what's vital.
So that's, I think that's good enough. That's Randy's attempt to rewrite school closing history, and it won't fly. The Chicago Teachers Union back in 12 of 20 said the push to reopen schools is rooted in sexism, racism, and misogyny. Chicago Teachers Union leader is blasted for pushing to keep schools closed because classrooms are unsafe while she vacations in Puerto Rico. Oh, did it again. That was January 2021. Reason Magazine, Teachers Union wants wealth taxes, charter school bans, and Medicare for all before schools can reopen. What does this have to do with safely educating kids in the midst of a pandemic? Not much. New York Post, powerful teachers union influenced CDC on school reopenings, email show, May 1st, 2021. School closures have been made with public politics in mind, not science. New York Post, January 18th, 2022. Reason Magazine, school reopenings linked to union influence and politics, not safety. New data suggests that school districts in states with strong teachers unions are significantly less likely to reopen in person this fall. Huh, that was August 19th, 2020. Teachers union threatens safety strikes before Biden's speech. The American Federation of Teachers adopted a resolution denouncing unsafe and unsound plans or the faulty implementation of plans. That was Politico. Fox News, White House considers teachers unions labor dispute before releasing reopening guidance emails show. Latest batch of emails further shows Biden administration's coziness with teachers unions. Forbes magazine, teachers unions sue Florida governor to block reopening of schools, January 20th, 2020. Roll call, donations from teachers unions spiked as Congress debated schools reopening virus relief. Funding from AFT, NEA went primarily to Democrats. USA Today. Teachers forget. Unions want parents to forget what happened during COVID. Don't let them. There's a reason why 1.5 million students left their public schools in the 2020-21 school year. Parents weren't happy with extended closures and the uncertainty that came with it. August 28th, 2022, New York Post, 2 decades for $200 billion. How teachers' unions sold out our kids in the pandemic. September 1st, 2022, by Nathan Cunningham of the New York Post. So she wants amnesty. That's why she said that on TV. Hell no. Over 70% of children are now afraid of climate crisis and suffer from so-called eco-anxiety, a new survey reveals. 27% of the children surveyed were anxiety-ridden over the impact changing global temperatures have on animals, while 19% said plastic pollution is their greatest concern. A peer-reviewed study published in July also found that children are increasingly experiencing negative emotions, including anger, sadness, guilt, and hopelessness that characterize eco-anxiety, the National Center for Science Education report says. Approximately 75% of public school science teachers in the United States teach climate change. That's not coming from Republican conservatives. That's from the teachers you can see on Libs of TikTok that Randy recruits, hires, defends, and promotes. CRT is now mandatory in 58 of top 100 medical schools, by the way. Good luck getting care in 5 to 10 years if you're white. More on that tomorrow, by the way. Steve, have any comment?
You said a mouthful, Steve, and Randy and her ilk, who she supports, all the people that back her up, they're just demonic. What can I say? And they lie. It is their native tongue is they speak with a forked tongue. And I think you've just pointed out in spades that she is a liar.
And the worst. Yeah. Stay tuned for my thought of the week. Welcome to our thought of the week. But before I share, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to Mill Creek View Podcast. Just go to iTunes and hit the subscribe button or Twitter and follow us. And thank you for doing it. The Merriam-Webster Dictionary has declared gaslighting to be the word of the year for 2022 as searches for the term skyrocketed, though there was no specific incident or usage of the word to spark the sudden interest. The term refers to the practice of intentionally deceiving someone by telling them that the state of the world is not what they perceive it to be. The term is used often in online political debates to accuse opponents of lying. But gaslighting goes beyond lying. To carry out the deception, the perpetrator must be seen to believe the lie and to act as if it were true, interpreting subsequent events through the prism of an illusionary claim about reality. For example, when the Biden administration claimed inflation was zero, critics accused President Joe Biden of gaslighting by citing the month-to-month change in prices rather than the massive annual price increase. Likewise, on gas prices, when the president claimed to have lowered gas prices because by late 2022, they had fallen below their record highs in late spring, while they remained higher than when he took office in 2021. Peter Sokolowski, Merriam-Webster's editor-at-large, told the Associated Press it was a word looked up frequently every single day of the year. It also led searches on Monday morning on the dictionary website, beating sentient and LGBTQIA. Merriam-Webster traces the term to a 1938 play, Gaslight, by Patrick Hamilton, and two films in the 1940s. The term gaslighting was later used by mental health practitioners to clinically describe a form of prolonged coercive control in abusive relationships, the AP added. Well, that's it for this episode. Really hoped you liked it. Thank you, Mary Smith, for keeping Williamson County, Williamson County. Until tomorrow, this is your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief, millcreekviewonline.com. A new issue of the paper will be out this Thursday. Peace in our time.
County Fair. They were looking for America.